This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
The fear of public speaking. If you live with this fear, on today's show, you'll learn that you are not abnormal and you are not alone. At the same time, we'll find out that science is going to offer us some techniques and practices that can help us deal with that discomfort. Ryan, who is going to be helping us with that today?
Today, Greg, we are going to be speaking with Kristen Hamling, PhD. Dr. Hamling is a trauma and positive psychologist and a Toastmaster on hiatus in Whanganui, New Zealand. She is the founder of Wellbeing Aotearoa, which focuses on trauma-informed well-being practices. A facilitator, coach, and researcher, she has also served in the Australian Army. And Kristen has produced for us an article in the April 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. The title is A Question: Scared of Public Speaking? And Why Yes We Are. And so we are happy to welcome Kristen Hamling to the Toastmasters podcast. Welcome, Kristen.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, Kristen, you have some incredible credentials, PhD, trauma psychologist, and of course, experienced speaker. Now, let's just get right to the article. It seems that last year, while giving a virtual speech, your walls came tumbling down, and it seems like the doctor sometimes needs a little bit of help. Now, I'm thinking it's Saturday morning. You may be reluctant to want to relive that particular experience, but if you will, could you just please take us back to that moment where this all happened?
Yeah, that was horrible. That took me about 2 weeks to come back into what I refer into in the article is to the window of tolerance. I had to play hide and seek with my kids during lockdown. I went for bike rides. I hugged trees, listened to music. I was really surprised. I have so much experience. I have attended Toastmasters for years. I really thought I wouldn't have that happen to me, and it was horrible. So I'm so passionate about mental health. I'd put a lot of pressure on myself, which I do. I single-handedly think that I should be able to save the world and help everybody in it. And I wanted in this webinar to just do such a good job, convince people about how important it was to start building up habits for their well-being and to take care of their mental health as much as their physical health. And I wanted business leaders to take real responsibility for understanding why their workforce may not be performing and how we can support them. And I think the pressure that I felt to do such a good job and to achieve a certain outcome literally turned on my alarm in my brain, which is this amygdala. And it just turned the alarm on to such an extent that I was like, right. Well, my body responded with, well, clearly we have to do such a good job here, else people will die. And when you get to that level of stress, your attention really narrows and becomes really focused on problems and a really narrowed perspective. And if you can't find a problem, your brain will make it up. So I then afterwards focused on every single mishap and every little thing that went wrong. And as I said, it took me about 2 weeks to regain my perspective and come back into my parasympathetic nervous system, my calm body response, which then led my body to think, okay, the danger's over now. You can kind of chill out. I think it's really important to understand the physiology of fear and how it impacts us. And that has a huge role to play in whether we can kind of get up and nail this fear of public speaking. Yeah.
It sounds like you're very, very passionate about this particular topic. It's obvious.
Oh, it's kind of my work. I am really passionate about it.
I think it's interesting as I listen to you share your story and your experience, you did take that 2 weeks of really turning inward. And I imagine there was some beating yourself up and some shame and lots of negative emotions there. But ultimately, you did take a different approach. You turned outward. You went down a productive route. You made a contribution to others by writing this article. And I wonder, was that for you an intentional therapeutic intervention to redeem that experience?
I had done a couple of other things following that experience. One was reaching out to a therapist and getting some help myself, because you can't be objective all the time, obviously, when you're kind of in it yourself. So I reached out to a psychologist to get help for me. I did a few things on my, just on Facebook and with friends, and it was just such weird timing. Then I got asked to write the article, and I couldn't believe it. This is perfect timing. Really fortuitous.
Right. Kristen, at the top of the show, Greg commented on how having a fear of public speaking doesn't make someone abnormal. And I know that a lot of times when we're the one experiencing that fear, we might feel somehow broken or diminished or less than. But can you touch a little bit on the science behind the fear and explain both why it's so prevalent and why it can even be not a sign of illness, but a sign of health?
Your body always does what it's designed to do, and that is to keep us safe. So everything that you experience, there is a reason for it. Sometimes it's not obvious. So if we're in an experience where we're having a huge amount of adrenaline and kind of fear, we might think that that's, oh, I just have a fear of public speaking, or I just am not good at this, or this is just something that, you know, I can't do. What I often find is something's getting triggered. It depends on the extent. And I think a kind of healthy response to speaking in front of other people is that you should be a little nervous. That would be the normal response. Some people in the world, or entrepreneurs, I think are amazing, where they seem not to be the norm. They're like, they really seem to positively deviate from the norm around not getting terribly nervous of just getting up and speaking so eloquently. Kudos to them. That's awesome. I don't know too many of them. More often than not, I think the norm is we do get nervous because our body is designed, as I said before, to keep us safe. So if you're getting up and putting your whole self on show like that, and you're speaking perhaps of something that's meaningful to you, then there is the potential to be judged by others. And you want to make a good impression as well. That's what keeps you connected to other people. So at that real primitive level, our body's like, be careful here. We want these people to like us. We want to stay connected to our tribe. We don't want to be rejected. And at that primitive level, we will get that increase in cortisol, and just be aware of what's going on here. Alarm's going off a little. And that would be the normal response, just to get that heightened awareness so that we can kind of keep safe. Where I see people going really outside of that window of tolerance, so that's really into that sympathetic, high distress, really anxious, I would say there's probably something that's been triggered for them. So the way humans work is we're not particularly logical and rational a lot. When we get a feeling or a thought or a sensation, we can sometimes go back to other times in our life where we've felt that way before, and it can kind of come flashing back, but we might not completely be aware of it. We may not have the image of it. It might just be the emotion or a sensation of it, something. So if we're really triggered and we find it really hard to do this public speaking and it's really distressing, I would say we probably would want to have a look back to see, where have you felt this way before and what's actually happened? So you may have been humiliated and shamed within school, or bullied, or your parents did something to shame you as well some time ago, or in a relationship, something may have happened that's been quite traumatic and it may be getting triggered. And that still is a normal response, right? Because your body's like, hang on, we've felt this way before. I don't want to go through this again. Let's not risk this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to risk anything. Let's just keep it safe. And so your alarm will go off. You'll get all these experiences. And I think sometimes it pays to kind of go, why is that happening to that extent? I think everything's normal. There's just varying degrees of how it might affect you. And it just depends on what's in your past or what your anticipation is for the future. Because I put such pressure on myself to want to be fantastic and achieve these certain outcomes. And I'm a bit of a perfectionist and control freak, I suppose, that I had to look at some of my natural personality traits around how that really compromised my ability just to do a good job and stay relaxed in that time. So it's all normal, in my opinion. It's just how you manage it.
Why is that happening? That's something that I'm sure that a lot of us keep thinking and thinking and thinking. And in the article, you actually make reference to overthinking during a speech. One of the things that you had suggested is that we create some type of new speaking habits as an effective way to stop us from doing it. Because sometimes we just get too much into our heads. What does that look like?
For me, I really tell my clients and I tell myself, nothing outside of your window. Don't do anything outside of your window. Unless you're getting chased by a dog or someone's coming at you with a knife or there's some immediate danger, totally go outside your window to keep yourself safe. That's where you go into your sympathetic nervous system. But if you're standing, if you're getting ready for a speech, or if you're about to start your speech and you recognize that you're getting a little bit of nerves, and that's okay. But if you recognize you're going into real anxiety, too much anxiety, too much distress, what's going to happen is that you're going to go into your head. Your brain, your perspective will narrow and your alarm will go off. What it's designed to do is to overthink, is to go, right, is this a problem? Should I do this? What's going on here? So it's to really pay attention. You can do this at Toastmasters really safely, or you can do it at work, or do it wherever, at school, is to start recognizing how you're feeling. And if your heart's starting to race a little more, the sweaty palms, if you're feeling a bit anxious, you know, oh, I'm going too far out and I need to do activities that bring me back into my window of tolerance, which is where my parasympathetic is mostly engaged, and I get a little bit of that cortisol to promote performance, because we know a little bit of stress definitely promotes performance, but too much stress becomes trauma and then we're not functioning at our peak. So we do activities like calm breathing, 5 slow, steady breaths in. I get people to imagine that they're trying to fill their belly up like a balloon. So slow and steady breathing out into their diaphragm, building it out like a balloon, and a really slow and steady breath out. And I get even people to hum. And it activates our ventral vagus nerve, which is attached to our parasympathetic nervous system. Mm. So it really calms our body down. Music, talking to ourselves in the third person, connecting with a friend before we go on, watching a funny video. Everybody can do this. Some of us just might have to work a little harder at it and get a little extra help. Yeah. Because it depends on our personality, it depends on what's in our past, it depends on what's in our context right now, but everyone can do it.
So there's two aspects, I think, or maybe a distinction that I want to make, and that is there are habits that, and you just talked about some of them, that you can do, whether it's breathing or different things we can do to calm ourselves down, and then there's sort of a larger overarching process of what you call habituating your fear. What I understand you to mean by habituating your fear is leaning into it by, like, going to Toastmasters regularly and almost like we hear about exposure therapy, facing the thing that we fear, so that just like if we all went to Canada where Greg is, over time, hopefully, we would adapt to that freezing cold climate and the snow.
Exactly.
We would habituate to it. Is that an accurate way to look at it?
That's a beautiful metaphor. That's exactly right. And I think this is why I love Toastmasters. We all have that growth mindset and we all have this familiarity around what it can feel like, and we're so supportive of each other. But sometimes I've asked people when I'm practicing, some of my fellow Toastmasters, to sit in the crowd and frown at me and look bored and yawn and look at their watch. So I can get used to actually not... I can just habituate to when that happens outside of that setting.
Interesting.
Chat to a friend next, like, to make it hard for me so that I can habituate to that happening. That's something I do, is that I'll focus on the one or two people in the crowd that look like they're bored or yawning or whatever, and then that'll be that.
Right.
I'll get into my head and I'll go, right, they hate this, what am I doing wrong? And you can't do an effective speech then. And so how do I unhook from that? That's one of the things I like practicing. There's quite a few things that I wanted to practice at going to Toastmasters. Slowing down, structuring. So you'll hear that now. I'll slow down now because I've remembered. This is what resilience is that you problem solve. You get extra tools. Well, that worked. Well, that didn't work so well. So what else do I need to do? Who else do I need to ask for help? so I can build my tools up. And I have got this rich repertoire of resources and tools to know when I feel like this or when this happens or when that happens, I've got these tools that I can use. So not only do you habituate in the sense that if we it's a beautiful metaphor, Ryan, that if we go to Canada, we'll be freezing. Well, I've got actually a really good friend who's come from Florida to Whanganui. We live next to a mountain in Whanganui, and she's still cold. I think it's 3 years later. She's getting better, but it's still taking her time to kind of not be so cold here. Now her body's getting used to it. So the same as public speaking, the more you build up your tools of coping and the more you expose yourself to that, the body then goes, oh, so we can do this and I can feel okay. Actually, we can do this and I can feel a bit relaxed. We can do this and nothing terrible happens. Huh, maybe this is okay. Maybe I can do this. And the body will like, all right, let's let go of a little bit more of that fear.
Yeah. I'd like to touch upon one of the tools or techniques, or maybe you call it a habit, and that is talking in the third person.
I love that. Yeah.
When I first heard that, immediately I was thinking of Elmo on Sesame Street. Ah. Elmo always talks in the third person.
Nice. Wow.
Elmo loves you.
My understanding is that you're giving yourself some distance between you and the problem. So I'm just wondering if you could share, what is the psychology behind it? And by removing yourself from where you are, is that not maybe putting yourself maybe in denial?
Oh, God, that's a good question. Right, let's go all psychodynamic on me. That's a big question. Thanks, Greg. No, the answer's no, not from what I really like Cross's research on this. So he really showed quite compelling. I thought this was a beautifully designed study where he had people talk to themselves in the third person before they had to do a speech. It's fascinating in research where they need to induce a stress or trauma response in people. They'll often get them to speak publicly. Yeah, he reasoned that you can get some distance from the problem by talking yourself in that third person. Doesn't mean it's denial, because you're still acknowledging that there is a problem that you need to deal with or something you need to get on top of. If you're in denial, it would be you would make up some other story, or your defense would come in and you'd just sort of not be present particularly. I don't think it is denial. I think it is just getting that distance, seeing things from a better, a different perspective. So not rather being sort of in it, and if you get, as we talked before, too much in your head, you can lose perspective. This, come on, Kristen, you've got this, gives us a way of approaching it with a different perspective. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we've got for well-being and performance is perspective. Personalities are really complicated too. It depends on what you believe. I know there's a little bit of, I think there's different kind of thinking around this. Hopefully, if all things going well, we do sort of have a core sense of ourself. So, Kristen, who am I? But I also have different parts to my personality. So I have, you'll hear people say, part of me was angry, but part of me was sad. Part of me wanted to do this, but part of me wanted to do that. These parts carry different emotions and different experiences. And I think by talking to ourselves in the third person, it gives us perspective around, oh, is that kind of that part of me that doesn't like not being in control? Or is that part of me that puts too much pressure on myself and likes to be really perfectionistic? So why are you coming in right now? Or is that part of me that, you know, really wants to la la la? And for me anyway, when I do this, I feel like by saying, come on, Kristen, what's going on here? Come on, Kristen, you've got this. What's coming up here that's the problem? Or why are you feeling like this, Kristen? Then I think it gives me perspective to then see my whole system playing out and to see who's stepping in and what's stepping in and what's kind of giving rise to some of those emotions.
Actually, I found it quite fascinating, because I also noticed that not only were you speaking in the third person when you were giving your examples, but you were also asking yourself some questions.
I was.
Giving you an opportunity to think through for some possible answers and some possible solutions. So that makes a lot of sense.
Good.
Kristen, just as Greg gently challenged one of your points a bit, I'd like to do the same. And that is on this concept of mindful breathing.
Yes.
Kristen, I think a lot of people hear that advice and we've heard that before. Oh, just breathe, just breathe. And we might be tempted to think, okay, maybe it works if we cultivate this meditation practice over months and years. But is there really a way that right now in this moment, I can practice breathing and experience an immediate payoff?
I was feeling a little tense in my shoulders, getting a bit excited and going, oh, did I answer that question well? I was starting to notice I was kind of getting into my head a little, and I took one breath. I shut my eyes. I focused on nothing but my breath because I've practiced this so many times. And in one breath, I could feel myself come back into my window. I can't agree more with you, Ryan. It drives me bonkers when people say, just breathe.
I am breathing, otherwise I'd be dead.
yeah, that's right. We don't contextualize our advice. Why, when, how, to what end? We don't tell people all this stuff. Mindful breathing is a very powerful tool, but it's got bandied around. Mindfulness has got bandied around, and there's some contention coming up around whether mindfulness is really effective and should be used to the extent that it is. In its place, yes, 100%. You have to know how to breathe to get yourself into your window and activate that parasympathetic. A deep, calm, steadying breath into your diaphragm and then a slow, steadied breath out is a very powerful way of activating your ventral vagal parasympathetic nervous system. A lot of my clients I see have simply forgotten how to breathe. Exposure to trauma historically is very bad for long-term mental and physical health because it keeps people in this alarm state, and that cortisol, norepinephrine, these hormones wreak havoc with our body. So I have to teach people how to breathe again. Calm, steady, centered breathing. Everyone should know how to do that. If someone's really anxious and really upset, telling them just to breathe, I know what they're going to say, and for good reason. There's lots of other things that you need to do, but I think learning how to do that is a thing that you should have in your toolbox to pull out when you need it.
Well, Kristen, this certainly makes a lot of sense. You've given us a lot of sage advice in addition to some of the science behind the fear of speaking or the fear in general. As we slowly come to a close, you mentioned the term window a few times. So I'm just wondering, what are you referring to when you're talking about the window?
The window of tolerance is a concept. I think Dan Siegel coined this concept called the window of tolerance. If you really want to know what this means, there's a really amazing book which is available on Amazon called Outside My Window by Vicky Scott. And she's a local psychologist here, super proud of her, and she's written this book for children. It's probably one of the best ways to understand a window of tolerance. And I read it to all my clients, through to managers and firefighters and cops and kids, and read it to everyone. So Outside My Window by Vicky Scott. Window of tolerance is a concept that gives you an idea about when you are in your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your body's calm state. So there's not really an alarm going off in my head, which is the amygdala firing off, saying that there's some sort of danger I have to prepare for. So you're actually calm, steady, centered. You've got full perspective. That's inside your window. Well, you're calm, you feel safe, you're thinking clearly, you've got good perspective, you can problem solve, you've got really good executive functioning, meaning you can, solve problems and learn. That is inside your window, and that's where we mostly want to be. You can go a little bit up towards the sort of skirting around the window, which means you're stressed and you've got some sympathetic activity going on in your body. But it's promoting your performance. It's enabling you to think clearer, solve problems more quickly, remember. That's really good for us. Unfortunately, a lot of people spend a lot of time outside of their window. That's the trauma response. They're in that kind of fight or flight response. So something's been triggered. Their body's like, right, we need to be ready here. We're now in full-blown fight, flight response. I need to have a lot more energy. I need to get angry, or I need to run away from something. I need to avoid it, or I need to do something. That's fight, flight. And then if the body doesn't feel like it can solve the problem or it can get what it wants or needs, then it will go into that freeze response, which is, and you start to think really slow. I can't make a decision. I don't know what to do. I feel utterly overwhelmed. I feel paralyzed. I can't get out of bed. I just don't know what to do here. I can't think straight. So you can see how anxiety is really in that fight or flight, and depression goes down to that freeze because we don't know what to do. We can't fix this. So you have to be really careful if you spend too much time outside of your window, because you will not be performing very well in your life. A lot of work I do with people to begin with is not dealing with their problems unless it's immediate, but just teaching them how to get back and stay more within their window, because you'll find that when people get back to their window, the problems won't seem so big anymore. In fact, the problems won't be there. Sometimes I argue with anxieties, particularly with my son. He'll come home and he's had a hard day or he's been in a sleepover, and I'll start arguing with him or trying to fix the problems that he's presenting to me. And then I'm like, psychologist, can you please kick in? Kristen, can you be a little bit more insightful and reflective here in this, that your son is out of his window, and don't argue with his anxiety. You will never win. Anxiety is illogical, irrational, and you'll never win against it. And I recognized one particular day recently that I needed to come down into my office and lay down with him and co-regulate, which is lending him my nervous system where I can be calm and steady in my breathing. And I got him to match my breath, and we listened to calm music, and he went to sleep, and he woke up in his window. And he was a different kid. The window of tolerance is a way of you figuring out where you are with your stress and trauma response and your calming response, feeling it and knowing that if you're out for too long, things are probably going to start to decline, your performance will start to decline. So you kind of want to try and get back in.
Well, speaking of windows, unfortunately, as Greg alluded to, the window of this podcast is coming to a close here. and I have to say, Kristen, I, for one, am feeling very motivated to build my toolbox of strategies and techniques. And I suspect many of our listeners are feeling the same, and they may want to stay in touch with you, learn from you, perhaps even be coached by you. What is the best way for listeners to get in touch and follow the latest with Kristen Hamling?
You definitely can reach me through my Facebook page, Wellbeing Aotearoa. And Aotearoa is New Zealand, the Maori word for New Zealand. So Wellbeing Aotearoa, and the website www.wellbeingaotearoa.com.
Kristen Hamling, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with us today.
It's a complete pleasure. I really am passionate about this topic, and don't let fear stop you. Let it grow you. Let it be your strength. There are so many wonderful experiences out there, and I see that fear is something that stops people from living their potential and having the richness of life, and it really devastates me. So please be aware, if fear is stopping you, it doesn't have to. The only difference between you being able to achieve perhaps something different in your life or not is simply just having the tools to do so.
Beautifully said.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.